Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
Getting rejection builds resilience. It actually helps create confidence that you may not have had. I know that seems counterintuitive, but you have to go through hard things. It actually is part of our human cognition. It's our anterior mid-cingulate cortex. You have to go through things that aren't pleasant to make that stronger and to make yourself build resilience. And so that taught me specific lessons that, you know what? It builds a fire inside of you to want to go towards it. Whatever it is, it takes confidence and belief that you have the locus of control inside of you to go get it. And in this case, nobody was going to hold us back. Rejection after rejection. You have to have a bias towards action. You have to take initiatives. And so the question is, what are we going to do?
That was Dr. Gina Anderson. And what she said reminds me of two of my favorite quotes from pop culture. One is that it's by will and own that I set my mind in motion and that fortune favors the bold. Why is that important to this conversation? It's important because success is often a combination of mindsets, tool sets, and skill sets. And the reason why what Gina said reminded me of that is because her story is one of reshaping the mindset and moving forward accordingly to generate massive results. One of the key things that we have to think about is that if your mindset is freezing you in time, it's necessary for you to shift your mindset and think of things differently. Sometimes the reason that you're not successful or you haven't experienced success yet is because you're using the wrong playbook for the wrong game. And that's what we're going to cover in today's conversation, is how Dr. Anderson shifted her mindset, which ended up accelerating her into her startup journey. Let's learn a little bit more about Dr. Anderson. She's the CEO of Luma Brighter Learning, an award-winning learning company, and a 2024 and 2023 recipient of the prestigious Inc. 5000 Fastest Growing Companies Award. Dr. Anderson routinely publishes new measurable science-based techniques specifically focused on learning in logistics and transportation to help companies improve their safety scores and uphold compliance. She's the author of Thrive, How Learning Can Ignite a New Way Forward, and a contributing author to the best-selling book, Perspectives on Invisible Illnesses. She's recognized as a thought leader in learning and an Inc. contributing author. She's also the creator and host of the I Love Learning podcast, where leaders from around the world share what motivates them to learn. And Dr. Anderson holds a Doctor of Education in Instructional Systems Technology from Indiana University, where she also minored in learning science. She has a passion for helping people learn. Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here today.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun conversation, and I think I'm going to have a little bit more fun than usual because these are two nerds in front of a microphone, so this should be interesting. We often talk about how experiences earlier in our careers helped fast forward us to where we are today. So I think a good place for us to start is tear the Band-Aid off and have you tell us about one of the biggest screw-ups that you had in your career and what that taught you.
For me, it was really about waiting. I had this like impending inertia where I was paralyzed by really only seeing a problem with one solution. And I often talk about it like analysis paralysis, where I had created a product, I was ready to go to market, and instead of selling it, I thought I would wait. I don't know really what I was waiting for, but we didn't have any money to hire sales or marketing. So I thought, let's go after grants, because that's where you can get money, right? So I was thinking, where can we get money to really leverage and start selling this product? So it was a huge screw up because I waited. We actually went after a National Science Foundation grant, We had a partnership with a university well-established. I'm sure you've heard of the University of Notre Dame. They're well-known. The Southman City Schools. We had buy-in for leadership from around the city in support of our product and our idea to get funding. And we went after this grant and we lost. And we sat around and waited and said, what are we going to do? And you know what we did? We actually waited for the next year to apply again. So we waited. We went after funding again. We thought, oh, who else can we get on board to support our effort? And we went after another grant. And guess what the result was? It was the same thing. We didn't win the grant. So we spent 2 years waiting to win this money that we never won. And so the biggest mistake really was just looking at the problem in one way and just waiting. We didn't see another way out. I think we actually lost the grant 3 times. So it took 3 times of losing to say, okay, I guess we're done. I guess we're not going to do anything with this product.
So I want to dig in a little bit on what you said, and that's a pretty interesting sequence of events. One of the things that I'm wondering about is early on, you just mentioned, hey, we built this product. We think it's great. Mm-hmm. And we don't have the resources internally to hire sales or hire marketing. So let's apply for grants. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it caught my attention is that, and we're going to get real nerdy here.
That's good.
Whenever we think about the decision matrix, like how do we make decisions? We often gravitate towards the things that we like to do versus the things that we don't like to do, but know we need to do. And I'm probably hacking that up. But what I'm wondering is, why did you automatically go the direction of let's apply for grants versus I think the product's great. Why don't we just sell it ourselves and try to make a go of it? What was your mindset there where you automatically went the direction of applying for grants versus trying to make it happen yourself?
When you think about having a bias towards action, it's just the complete opposite. And when you think about what holds yourself back and your mind back, it's really, like you mentioned, it's the fear. It's like, I don't have the belief of my own mindset that I can do this and I could do it well enough than someone I could pay to do this job. The ironic part of that, like you said, the decision tree, like you as the person creating the product is the best person to sell it, right? It's because you have the most passion. If I'm able to go convince the University of Notre Dame to support my idea, if I can go to the city schools of South Bend to say, this is a product that I have that I want money for, and I can convince these large organizations, why couldn't I convince myself that I was good enough to go sell the product myself? And I actually write about this mindset in my book as a learning scientist, because it's really interesting how we ourselves hold ourselves back in the mindset of taking action on something. So why, you're right, why couldn't we sell it?
I like how you mentioned that sometimes our minds get in the way of what we should be doing, and I describe it as negative self-talk keeps us from doing things. But I want to jump forward a little bit. You went down the grant route. You've built this product that you're passionate about, that you think is great, that is going to solve a lot of problems. You've built this grant proposal that you believe is going to knock it out of the park. And then the decision comes back and basically whoever's on the other side of the grant process just tells you that your baby's ugly. So when you get that rejection the first time, what was going through your mind?
You can't believe it, right? So you get rejection and you think, how is this possible? Like, how can they not see the benefit of this thing that you've built, that you've put so much time in? And so I think at that point, I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs do this. You do it yourself, you doubt, maybe it's not a good product. Maybe no one will buy in it. So you start asking yourself these questions. And like you said, it's the self-talk that's not positive. And you start questioning it. Absolutely. Did I question, do we even have a product? And I think that's when everything changed.
Once you started asking those questions, you took another couple of swings at getting a grant, and both of those washed out too. What did you learn from those two or three failed attempts at getting the grant passed that provided enough momentum? You talked about inertia earlier. Mm-hmm. What was it about those multiple failures that provided the momentum for you to shift gears and do something different.
Yeah, I think that actually builds confidence. Is the rejection, is getting rejection builds resilience. It actually helps create confidence that you may not have had. I know that seems counterintuitive, but you have to go through hard things. It actually is part of our human cognition. It's our anterior mid-cingulate cortex. You have to go through things that aren't pleasant to make that stronger and to make yourself build resilience. And so that taught me specific lessons that, you know what? It builds a fire inside of you to want to go towards it. Whatever it is, it takes confidence and belief that you have the locus of control inside of you to go get it. And in this case, nobody was going to hold us back. Rejection after rejection. You have to have a bias towards action. You have to take initiatives. And so the question is, what are we going to do?
When we look at the trajectory that you took, we're talking maybe a couple of years, maybe longer, to get to the point where you have to channel your inner Thanos and say, fine, I'll just do it myself. But there's a lesson there too. Before you started to try and sell on your own, what did you learn by those three long drawn out failures that you needed to do differently when you started making the decision that I need to go to market myself?
Yeah, I think it's about recognizing in yourself that you yourself holds the skill to do whatever that is. And for us, it was sales. Like you said, like I still don't see necessarily myself as that's my greatest strength, but it is a strength that I have that I can do. And so you often have to do things that maybe you don't believe that you have the greatest strength in to be able to accomplish what you need to accomplish. And in this case, it was marketing and also selling. And so to be able to go door to door with those skills and building those skills. And look, it wasn't the first time. Over those 3 years, I had been selling it without even knowing I was selling it, because I had talked about it so much. I had formulated it so much in my head that I knew the value that people saw in the idea. So learning about what other people saw as the value of your product helped me at the end of the day go out and sell the product.
Oh, that's really interesting. What you just said about you had been selling the entire time and learning what people thought about the product before you actually went into active outbound sales mode. The reason why it caught my attention is that when you think about startup philosophy, it's fail, fail fast, fail often, fail forward. And one of the struggles that happens in founder-led organizations is that you're not getting in front of enough people and getting enough feedback from people who are agnostic to who you are or who your product is for you to iterate to the point where the product actually has legs in the marketplace. So when you look at that, how did you increase the reps in the market so you can actually really validate what you have as a product when you finally decide to flip the switch and actually actively sell this in the marketplace?
Yeah. So I would say for us, there was a point in time where we, like you said, we talked to a lot of different types of people. People who would actually buy the product was the most valuable. So when we ended up, we inadvertently sold the product without even meaning to sell the product. We had a president of a local bank that we were pitching the idea to and telling them what we wanted to do that actually said, I'll buy your product. So our first sale was done inadvertently that we weren't even quote unquote selling, right? So I think that was one of the biggest lessons too, is that just having the passion and knowing that you're filling a gap in the market sells itself, because there is a need for your product. You're selling something that somebody needs to help solve a problem. So for us, inadvertently sharing our passion sold it, and that was our first sale. So that helped build the confidence that, wow, we have a product that we can sell. So we sold it a few times to different business leaders at chamber events. And while we were working on the product with one of our clients, we actually were introduced to the concept of maybe your product actually applies somewhere else. So it got us thinking that we had something that was more, even more applicable in a different industry.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our accelerated transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show. So there's a few things in what we've talked about so far that I want to sequence out and get a bigger idea or better idea of what we learned from it. Early on in the process, there was inertia. You couldn't get going. And then once you got going, for lack of a better phrase, you fell into a couple of early sales. And then in founder-led organizations, your earlier sales are generally people who are early adopters. They're not representative of the broader marketplace that might be in the market for your product. So when you look at those two hops, from standing still to getting going, and then from getting going to getting some early wins, going through that experience, what were the major lessons that you learned from those sort of different stages in your development as a startup founder and as a product leader?
I would say the one thing is trying to figure out like what is holding us back, because I think for us, it was taking little steps and feeling things out, which in the end ended up helping us scale to be where we are today with such strength. But it was learning what did the customers like and what did they appreciate, and understanding really why we were taking action. Again, it goes back to bias of action in your mindset, because why aren't we taking action in other areas? And so from listening to that and reflecting on our own thoughts of really what is it that's holding us back? And honestly, I think it comes back to fear, right? Fear of failure, fear of the unknown, fear of what's going to happen. But I think that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, is being okay with a little bit of flexibility and the unknown, but also being confident in the fact that we had a product that was needed.
You mentioned two really important questions as you're going through this learning process and shifting the way that you operate. One was the question, what's holding us back? Mm-hmm. What is holding us back from doing the things that we need to be doing or doing what's necessary? Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting question. And then the other question that you asked earlier on was a comment from one of your early buyers, maybe you're not in the right space. So when you look at those two questions, how did that those two questions come together that provided the aha moment that changed the way that you were thinking, changed the way that you were looking at the marketplace, and changed how you actually went to market?
I think it's asking this the question of why not. It's like reflecting on really why not? Why not a different industry? Why not add value in a space that I had no idea about? And being okay, being open to the idea that there may be another path that we hadn't even imagined. I think it's being flexible with the unknown and stepping into the unknown with confidence, because we didn't know. I don't know anything about an 80,000 pound truck. And so there's going to be a lot to learn, and you have to be okay with, number one, this is going to be a learning journey. I'm going to learn a lot, and I'm always going to have to learn, and understanding that from why not. And I think that's the question, is we don't always look and think about all the different angles of possibilities. We're often very focused on one way of thinking and one way of doing something. But when you can open and ask yourself the question, why not? Why not me? Why not now? It's powerful.
That's a really great question. Why not me? Why not now? That's a really great couple of questions. And questions are great. And even suggestions from a potential customer is great. Maybe you should be in some other segment. What was the process that you went through to actually validate, oh, this does make a lot of sense there? What happened that connected those dots finally for you that you ended up landing in the space or in the niche that you're in?
Yeah. So our office location was right next door to a company serving the transportation industry. And they actually saw what we were doing for the higher education space and the business space. And they suggested to me that, do you know any fleets that you could go out and observe? And I'm like, no, I don't. And so they actually, it's the partnerships, it's being connected to other people that kind of introduce you into those spaces. So I was able to go out and observe and sit in orientation sessions of trucking companies, and I was horrified. I saw what was being done, and I thought, wow, this is an industry that could really benefit from a learning company with specific learning tools to help them not only be safer, but also to support them in their education efforts. So that connection of having somebody introduce me and being willing and open to sit and go observe, and all of it was an observation. Because we didn't have to move forward, but when you see a need and you could solve a problem with your product, why not?
I like how you leveraged some soft ties to get into spaces so you can actually fully address the problem or at least observe a problem taking place. But there's another piece of it that's interesting, which is when you think about being in trucking and logistics and presenting a learning solution, I would think that there would be some level of friction there already, because I don't imagine those spaces being heavily tech-oriented or solutions-oriented from a tech perspective. So did you encounter that? And if you did, how did you overcome it?
Yeah, I think we're still overcoming it. I don't think it's ever something that maybe in some industries, you have a population that didn't grow up with technology that's primarily in the space. But here's the thing. An 80,000-pound vehicle, nuclear verdicts, safety being the most critical thing in the industry, the health and wellness, the mental health and wellness of the truck drivers, there's such a need that, again, an industry with inertia and not making change is just going to make more drivers not enter into the space. And we all need truck drivers. It's an industry we all need. And so we still are trying to support the industry in understanding the difference between learning science and learning technology versus delivering of generic content. So it's ongoing education. And we've been in the industry for 11 years. So it's an ongoing communication and learning point that something that you always are, at least we are always doing as a company in the industry, is continuing to educate the industry.
So I want to zoom out a little bit. When we think about the conversation that we've had so far, we've talked through a couple of different transitions. One was just getting moving. And then the next was getting moving in a direction that's oriented to something that might scale or get bigger. And as you're going through these transitions, yeah, there was a lot of inertia that you had to overcome. And when you look back at that, how did the process of overcoming inertia better prepare you for success in the long run when you're talking about product development, when you're talking about sales, when you're talking about opening into new markets? What's the story there?
Yeah, I think the big story just goes back to after going through the initial product and waiting. And that comes up still. I'll give you an example, but having that experience helps you continue to move your mindset forward. There was a couple of years ago, I was really trying to think of how we leverage our marketing, and I started getting into leveraging thought leadership. And I was waiting again. It's like I'm waiting for the industry to invite me to come speak. I'm waiting to have opportunities to get out and share science. And one of the other Inc. 5000 companies said to me, don't ask permission. You should make your own voice. And the thing is, a light bulb went out. It's sure it is again. You're stuck. What are you waiting for? You don't have to ask permission. All the power that we have inside each and every one of us is our brain and our minds. We hold the power to move ourselves forward. But we also, in the same token, we're the very ones that hold ourselves back. So I actually have that taped to my desk as a constant reminder that you have to do things. Stop overthinking it. Stop holding yourself back.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that. It's interesting at a couple of different fronts, because what you're describing flies in the face of a lot of biographies of startup founders, because most tech startup founders are always talking about run fast and break things. And you've taken a very deliberate approach and then gotten faster as you go. When you look at this journey that you've been on, and you've had a couple of pretty significant pivots, And if you were talking to that startup founder that's 10, 15 years behind you, just thinking about starting up their product or starting up their journey, how would you advise them when it comes to getting traction faster in the marketplace based on what you went through?
I would definitely tell them, so don't avoid action because you're afraid of making mistakes. Really, the only mistake that you can make is not trying to do what you're trying to do to begin with. For me as a learning scientist, I always think of trying something as not failure, because a lot of times people are, the one thing you're scared of is the fear of failure. And really, there's no such thing, just learning. I always try to think of what is really holding me back. It's like, why not? I said this earlier, like, why not? What? Let go of whatever is holding you back and really pay attention to, why are you overanalyzing? Why was it that I wasn't going after? Why was I going after grants and not selling? So once you understand the why, it's going to really help alert you in the future when you're being held accountable to yourself. Because if you understand what's holding you back, you can let it go. You can consider where your locus of control really resides. The reality is that all of us have the power in our own minds and brains to move ourselves forward. The locus of control is inside of you. I'm waiting. I'm over here waiting to be invited to speak. Who am I waiting for? Really, I'm the one that should be out doing this and speaking on learning and learning science. And always, and you said this earlier, practicing self-talk, my secret weapon has always been my mind. I learned at a very young age the power of our self-talk and what that does to set ourselves forward. So just, I would say to pause and listen to your mind and hear what you're telling yourself. What is holding yourself back? Our self-talk really can be the bridge that helps us accomplish anything we want to accomplish. If you have the confidence and you're telling yourself that you are boundless and you can soar, you really can accomplish the impossible.
Great stuff, Gina. If people want to continue the conversation and learn more about you and some of the things that you're into, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Gina Anderson. You can find me on lumabrighterlearning.com. Thank you so much for having me today.
Great hanging out with you and thanks for coming on the show. And I think when we're talking about the startup journey in general or how you can get faster at progress or faster at success, there's a lot in what you said that makes sense, but there's two things that I think are particularly important to call out. And the two things that stand out to me is one of your points about letting go of your assumptions. Why aren't we in this space? Why shouldn't we consider this niche as something that we should explore? Oftentimes your pathway to success is penned in or restricted from you based on the assumptions that you make about where you should be. And if you can let go of those assumptions, it sets you on a path for success, probably faster and in unexpected ways than you had ever considered. The other part of the conversation that stood out to me was how you mentioned that it was through a partnership relationship that you ended up in the trucking space. Ended up in a space that you would have never considered. Those are the two biggest things that stood out to me. The importance of letting go of assumptions and the need for you to be deliberate about getting into spaces that you would never have considered. I think that's good advice for anybody that is looking to move forward and accelerate into any space and hit fast forward on whatever initiative that they're trying to launch. So for those of you who've been listening to this conversation, we appreciate you hanging out. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. And then tune in next time where we'll have another leader hanging out with us and telling us about how they screwed things up big time. But that screw up ended up providing them the key to hitting fast forward on their career. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.